Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Redefining Security podcast. Have you ever thought that we are selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Perhaps we are. So let's look at how we can organize a successful InfoSec program that integrates people, process, technology, and culture to drive growth and protect business value. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net. Purpose-built for securing Active Directory, Semperis delivers first-of-its-kind solutions to address the entire lifecycle of a directory attack. Finding and fixing security vulnerabilities, intercepting privilege escalation and persistence, and quickly responding to cyber attacks. Learn more at Semperis.com.
Marco, here we are.
Sean.
Did you get that nice email this morning?
Which one? The one with the price list? For what the cost of security is?
The cost of security, it's $50, 1/100th of a Bitcoin, and you're off and running.
Wouldn't that be easy if you were just like, hey, there is a sticker price, you're just walking through the aisle and you choose your security product. And then you buy something, you realize, hey, you need another accessory, then you need another one. And then to make it work, you need to patch it with this other thing. And in the end, yeah, when you think about ransomware, what's the real cost of it? And this is what we're going to talk
that's
about.
That's the other side of the coin, right? So there's the impact of not having good practices and processes and technology and people in place to really understand the impact of cybercrime and fraud against the business. And there are a number of obvious costs associated with it, but a number of hidden costs. And we're going to get into that today. And we have two amazing guests joining us for this conversation, Ali Mellon and Tyler Hudak. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And we're going to get into this, but before we do that, a few words from each of you about your role and what you're up to and why this topic is so important to you. And Ali, we'll look at that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm a Forrester analyst. I cover security operations, including the people, processes, and technology in the SOC. I've been with Forrester since the start of the year, actually, and I spend most of my time advising clients on their security strategy and how to improve the processes that they have in place, as well as doing research to help them solve the challenges that they currently have.
And Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, my name is Tyler Hudak. I'm the practice lead of incident response for TrustedSec. We deal with a lot of ransomware incidents. That's probably our number one type of engagement that we're dealing with. So we will come in and help a victim with performing incident response, investigation, containment, eradication, and recovery. And through that process, we just get to see all of the issues that clients tend to go through, all the real costs that a lot of people just don't really consider.
And one thing I want to tell our audience, we're not just listing all the costs here. We're out here, you're going to look into the value. It's not that we just pay money. We got nothing to show for it. There is a value in being secure. There is a value in being prepared. And we're going to go through all of that, Sean. And I'll say for you the honor to get the first ball rolling here.
The owner of what? The ransomware?
The owner of the ransomware. You test that. Let me know how that goes.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks very much for passing that ball. I'm thrilled because this every so often I come across a thread either on LinkedIn or Twitter that is insightful and impactful. And there was one from Tyler that really outlined some of the costs, and I think it was a 10-part tweet, and we'll include that in the resources. I want to start with the obvious one, Tyler, and that's the ransom itself, and then we'll just kind of bounce around to all the different ones. What are you seeing in terms of that cost, and how are organizations dealing with that cost? So do you see them paying the ransom these days? Because I know the government suggests that they don't. Mm-hmm. So what are your initial thought on that particular cost?
So in terms of, you know, dollar figures, how much it's typically costing organizations, I've seen it anywhere from four figures all the way up to seven figures for ransoms. The thing that everybody needs to remember is that the ransom may not just be to get your data back. So with ransomware, just, you know, to set the level, you know, its whole purpose is to encrypt your files so that you have to pay to get those back. Well, that only works if, you know, you don't have backups, and you know, we can talk about that and how the attackers go after those. But you know, if the attackers or if the victim is able to recover via a backup, then obviously they don't need to pay the ransom. And so the attackers are starting to move into a double extortion scheme where they're not only encrypting your files, they're going to take them out beforehand. They're going to take your sensitive data. And so because of either a victim needs to recover their files because they have no other reason, or they need to prevent sensitive data from being leaked, we are seeing a lot of organizations pay the ransom. If I had to put a number on it, you know, with just the clients that we're working with, I would say it's probably in the range of about, you know, 50 to 60% end up paying the ransom. You know, it's not something that obviously I would recommend because there's lots of issues with it, but it does happen a lot. Some organizations just don't have a choice in the matter. If they want to stay in business, they have to pay the ransom to get their data back.
Yeah, and just a quick follow-up on that, Tyler. Do you see the amount of the requested ransom changing based on different attributes of the data, the company, the sector they work in? And I'd like Ali's view on this as well, but let's keep it with you for a second.
Not really. At least I haven't seen based on the data that the attackers are able to exfiltrate. I'm sure that there is something there. It's really more along the lines of, you know, who the company is, how much money they make, and more importantly, how much their cyber insurance is willing to pay out. You know, these attackers are smart. They do their homework. If they can get their hands on your cyber insurance policy while they're in your network, then they're going to know exactly how much money they're going to get, and that's what they're going to ask for. So they're very smart along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely second that. And also just taking into account that it's really once the attackers are actually able to land a target that they can start doing that deeper evaluation. And I think that that's the part where the double extortion comes into play, is because they can ultimately ask for a lot more money for the actual data that's been stolen from companies that they recognize are larger, and kind of do that part of the process manually so that they can actually get more funds.
So looking at things from a more of a general perspective, like a business perspective, not just a security perspective. Of course, as we were joking at the beginning, you can put together an entire list of costs, and then people may say, you know what, maybe it's cheaper to pay the ransom. Either is illegal or not, that's another story. But is it really that cheaper? I mean, how do you even quantify a calculation like that? Ali, maybe from a business perspective, are people starting to get there? Are companies making a plan for something like this to happen? How is the culture changing?
Yeah, so it may very, don't quote me on this, but it may very well have been cheaper. It may very well have been cheaper 5-10 years ago to actually pay the ransom and just cover it up. But that's not really the case anymore because of the culture shift that we're seeing. If anything, I think that what we've begun to see is that more and more companies are being targeted and hit with these types of attacks. And it's not necessarily that you will always be protected, even if you go through all the best practices that you can. Those are the circumstances where that transparency and doing the right thing is the most important thing for an organization to do. Because at that point, it becomes a brand and reputation risk, which can have a significant impact for organizations that perhaps they come off a little bit slimy and pay the ransom, or they kind of try to hide what's happening. They don't tell their customers when their data has been stolen. These types of things break trust. And trust right now is so important in the concept of a breach, and transparency comes right along with that. So I think that I totally agree that the culture is shifting, and I think it's shifting to accepting that breaches are a reality and putting a lot more faith in those organizations that are honest and clear with what happened and why.
Yeah, there's definitely a lingering cost that then it's going to be much, much bigger than what it was. And Tyler, there is a lot of cost associated though with staying secure. I know we saw a list of it, from insurance to security itself and legal, many other things.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of people, or a lot of companies who have even, you know, thought about ransomware attacks, they just think, oh, all right, well, you know, we've got insurance that's going to cover everything, or, you know, all we have to do is pay the ransom and things go back to normal. And that's really not the case. There's so many other things other costs associated with these types of attacks that a lot of organizations, in my experience, just don't even realize they need them until, you know, it actually happens. So we've gotten into a lot of cases where I get on the phone with somebody and they're telling me that they got hit with ransomware. And the first question I always ask is, do you have cyber insurance? Because that is going to dictate how the rest of that call is going to go and how the rest of that incident is going to go. And a lot of organizations that don't have it, then you have to start getting into, all right, well, you need to contact your legal. You need to figure out how you're going to, you know, do IT support over the next, you know, 2 weeks, because you're not going to be able to work your people 24 hours a day. You know, are you going to bring in somebody to assist with that? Do you need, if data was taken, do you need to, like Ali said, do you need to notify? You need to keep that trust present there. And if you don't have the experience doing that, or your communications teams don't have the experience doing that, you need to bring in a crisis communications firm that does. And all of these costs add up. You know, these people don't work for free. You know, this is their job, this is their expertise. And so, you know, some of these costs can be very, very expensive. And it's not I think another big misconception, which directly leads into costs, is that it's not a weekend thing. If you get hit on Friday with ransomware, you're not going to be back up and running on Monday. I have never seen that happen. We're talking weeks to months before you are completely back up and running. And that whole time, you have all these extra costs.
Yeah. And Ali, maybe your thoughts on this as well, because we've touched on the idea of cyber insurance, and there's a number there, and it covers certain elements of the quote unquote recovery process, but not everything. And I'm wondering what you see in terms of where organizations expect something to come with their cyber insurance and where they might get let down in terms of how they communicate, how they recover their data, how they bring the systems back online. Does it cover the costs of a PR firm and a crisis communications team and a legal counsel that's dedicated to this type of thing? Where are the lines drawn from your perspective?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And it's actually something that the cyber insurance companies are currently struggling with right now as well. And we've seen that in France, where there's been a temporary suspension on actually paying cyber insurance, paying out for the cost of the ransom payment. These types of things show the push and pull that comes with these kinds of attacks from the cyber insurance perspective, where since it is still so new, they're not entirely sure which aspects of this they need to cover versus the ones that are just going to be too cost prohibitive, even for insurance providers. And I think that the ransom is a key example of that, where I think that we really see the costs of a ransomware attack become exorbitant is around things like, first off, legal, because legal has to be involved from moment one with these types of attacks, but also from the actual business disruption itself. And this kind of relates back to the question that you started with, which is about what type of business is more likely to be hit with this type of attack and how is it going to affect them? And I think that for especially critical infrastructure providers, these attacks are the most painful and you want them to go away as quickly as you possibly can. We saw this last year with the ransomware attacks specifically targeting hospitals. We saw this over the weekend with the ransomware attack targeting fuel pipelines. the attackers want to make money. They want the easiest way to make money. And that's through disrupting the business of an organization that cannot go even a few days without operations being normal. And critical infrastructure providers are exactly that.
Yeah. And I think there's clearly no easy way out of this. And I want to, let's just assume some of it's covered by cyber insurance and there isn't some, or there's some things left to be covered. I want to get to some of the lists that you put together, Tyler, just IT support. Mm-hmm. Let's break that down a little bit, because I mean, if something is not running for the organization, that's all hands on deck, right? So how does that change how IT operates? And do you see organizations having to bring supplemental folks in, changing to new systems, redeploying new software? What are some of the impacts there that may not be obvious?
All of the above, really. So, you know, I've worked cases where, you know, an entire organization, a very large organization, was supported by like two or three IT people. You can imagine once you get hit with ransomware, you know, if they're overworked when things are running normally, when everything goes down, there's no way that they can, you know, handle everything. Even more, you know, the organization or leadership is not going to want them to stop working. You know, we need to get systems back up as fast as possible. And so because of that, you know, there's a limit to how much somebody can work. And, you know, I understand that. I work in incident response. It's not uncommon for myself or my team to work 16 to 18 hour days when we get on an incident. So, but you can only push yourself so long. And the same with somebody's IT department. You know, if you don't have enough people there to be able to do rotating shifts, you know, like 10 hours on, 10 hours off, or 12 on, 12 off, something like that, then you're going to need to bring in some people who can help you with that. That's kind of on the people side. On the hardware and the infrastructure side, a lot of organizations are still relying on servers that are no longer supported, on old hardware, because it just keeps working. Or they may even have software which can only run on these old unsupported systems anymore. It's not uncommon for us to go into an organization and find, you know, Windows 2003 servers, Windows XP systems, and so on, because the organization has a specific piece of software that can only run on that perform some critical facet of their business. And of course, in some of these cases, the company that even made that software is no longer in business. So, you know, now you have to start bringing in people who are experts in this area to help you bring things back up. And so, you know, that's just really two of the aspects. It can go, you know, even further. You know, when you bring once you've been attacked, once you've been compromised, you don't just want to restore. You know, if you can, you want to rebuild in a known good environment. And this is the time to start putting into some, you know, good security practices. Obviously, you don't want to do anything that's going to break your organization. But, you know, what we typically recommend is, let's say Active Directory gets compromised. You don't just restore that Active Directory. You build a new Active Directory server in a good environment. Make sure it has all the patches applied. Make sure that it is using good security practices. And then you start rebuilding your network on that good segment. You have like your known good and your known bad segment. And again, it just means people. It could mean hardware, things like that. If I think a really good example of this is a couple of years ago when everybody got hit with NotPetya. I think it was Norsk. They had their entire organization wiped out. They made the decision to replace every hard drive in their environment. And they are not a small organization. I remember reading or hearing stories that they had bought every hard drive off of, you know, in certain countries. And so they were literally having to go to other countries and have people drive these hard drives in just so they can get back up and running. And you can imagine, I mean, that's an extreme example, but, you know, again, you know, not only do you have to have the IT to support that, you know, you have to make sure that your processes are working well. If you had to reimage every single one of your PCs in an organization, how long is that going to take? You're not doing that overnight. You're probably not even doing that in a month. You know, we're talking, you know, months and months of work there. So, you know, it's not just a money cost. There's a time cost as well.
Well, I'd like to get your opinion, Ellie, on this from a more of a business perspective, because obviously, as you said, it's not like, okay, it happened, I paid a ransom, and we're back and up and running. It's not like I'm going to buy a new car, but you may consider that maybe you want to buy a new car instead of fixing it because that is going to be broken again next time, right? And that, Tyler, your example is pretty good when you say, look, it's a good time to make an assessment. But Ali, my point is here about the size of the business, the maturity of the business, because probably not every business out there can afford to be not up and running, can not afford to take months to replace everything. And there is a huge cost associated with that. So how can company, of course, be prepared to do this, but also how do different level of companies can face it in a different way, can approach it in a different way?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. And the best way that I like to describe it is if you're with someone and you need to outrun a bear, you just have to outrun that person. You don't actually have to outrun the bear. That's the way that I think about ransomware for small and medium organizations for the most part. Now, I deal with a lot of clients that have much, much more mature security programs generally, but that doesn't change the fact that most organizations are not mature in their security practices or processes. They just need to make sure that they don't open themselves up to being the easiest target on the block. And the best way they can do that is by doing the cyber hygiene, IT hygiene basics. Because a lot of these organizations, they don't even have a security person. So it's about things like, of course, strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, regular backups, all things that the IT team should or individual should be able to handle. It's also about really pushing the patching process, of course, which is incredibly critical, and just doing everything that you need to do to get the basics right, so that when the next incident happens, you aren't the target of that attack. It's unfortunately really just a battle for survival more than anything else for these small to medium organizations who don't have typically any security budget. But that's the most critical thing that you can do, is just have someone on the IT side who knows the basics and can implement the basics and stick to them. And then as the business grows, you can start to expand that security operations program.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick with you, Ali, for another thought on this in terms of, certainly in the last year or slightly more, we've seen an accelerated digital transformation or disruption, however you want to look at it. And companies weren't prepared for changes that were coming to them in their IT infrastructure and their security programs in terms of how to manage a remote workforce and new SaaS applications and cloud infrastructures that they had to stand up and all these different things. Many came to that and dealt with it. And I'm wondering if we can draw some parallels there for ransomware, where maybe organizations saw or know they need to make an investment in how they have their infrastructure defined and configured and deployed and managed, as well as their security programs. Maybe they did update some monitoring technologies or backup technologies. Is certainly with all the awareness of ransomware now, is there an opportunity for organizations to say, okay, we'll probably have to make these changes if we get hit with ransomware, so perhaps we just accelerate those now before they become a problem? Are you seeing any organizations having that type of conversation?
I am, but not as many as I would like to say. I mean, part of me feels like the past year, we've just been pummeled with ransomware attacks, and they just continue to happen. And they continue to happen to these very large organizations who you don't really think they should be continuing to happen to. So ultimately, I think that these types of incidents should 100% highlight the importance of taking any steps to better secure your organizations against ransomware. I think that ransomware is kind of like ground zero for the thing that you can easily relate to the business and say, hey, if this happens to us, we are in trouble. We need to implement these procedures. They're not incredibly complex. This isn't going to be a $1 million security program, but they're going to benefit us. And then we can build up to the $1 million security program. But it is challenging to actually get organizations to take actions based on something that's happening to someone else. We do a lot of surveys of our client base and of typically large organizations to see when they choose to make these changes. And it does, unfortunately, tend to be after a breach. And a lot of times, what it comes down to more than anything else is just having the conversation about security more, which is interesting because to me, if the breach is not severe enough, it's almost like these organizations choose to talk about security more. They have that awareness, but they're still not ready to actually commit the dollars or the manpower that it takes to make sure that their organization will be secure for future breaches. So we may just not have reached that critical mass that we need to, where organizations are like, okay, this needs to be one of our top three priorities at all times. But ultimately, as we see ransomware attacks continue to increase, especially targeting such large organizations and having such a potentially huge impact, we're going to see it become even more of a priority than it already is.
So, Taylor, if somebody look at the list that you made, they may say, you know what, I'm giving up. But we know that those are all relevant topics. If right. you had to get into like a priority, like a top three of what, if you can do them all, do this. So that's a generic question, but also I would like for you to pinpoint the role of PR and communication and crisis management in all of this. Does it make the top three list or not?
It probably does. So if I had to, you know, do the top three, you know, the first one is definitely going to be cyber insurance. Cyber insurance and it really any cyber incident role is going to fill multiple needs. It again, you know, understand it all depends on your policy and it all depends on the organization that you're going with and so on. So you know, everybody needs to do their homework. But if you get a good company, a good insurance company, you know, they're going to provide you what's called a breach coach, which is essentially likely a lawyer, which understands how cyber incidents work. They know how to they know what steps need to be taken for your type of incident. They know what information to look for and so on. Additionally, they're going to hopefully provide you a incident response retainer or at least access to an incident response company so that you have somebody you can call if and when this happens. And some other policies do provide you things like crisis communication firms and things like that. But cyber insurance would definitely be number one. And obviously, they're going to help you pay the ransom, or at least right now they will. Who knows? You know, like Ali said, you know, that landscape is starting to change a little bit. So I think, you know, the next year will actually be kind of interesting to see where things go. But cyber insurance, definitely number one. For me, number two, and, you know, again, I'm a little bit biased, but, you know, have an incident response firm on retainer. Even if you have an insurance company, you know, make sure that you're connected to one of their panel providers or they're one of the incident response companies on their approved lists. But even not, you know, make sure, you know, you actually know who you're going to call. The reason I say get an incident response retainer is because if you already have those contracts in place where somebody is contractually obligated to help you, if you get into an incident and you need incident response, you're going to start calling people. And depending on when that happens, you may be told, I'm sorry, we're just too busy. You know, my busiest time of the week is Friday afternoon, because that's when everybody calls us. If somebody calls me 4:30 Friday on a Friday, chances are I may tell them, I'm sorry, we don't have time to take on your case because I only have so much bandwidth within my organization. So, you know, that's something else to keep in mind. It's that incident response retainer. And then probably, you know, number three, to me, is probably a tie between having a good legal counsel and crisis communication. Again, you know, a lot of these, you'll notice, you know, insurance is going to take care of you for you, or at least help you with. Crisis communication, I think, is definitely key. I'm sure Ali can speak to this better than I can, but I have just seen so many organizations do communications during an incident horribly. You know, we can go on the online and see, you know, multiple examples of this. And so, again, if it comes down to, you know, your communications team, your marketing team, your PR team has never done this before or never even looked at this before, you don't want them doing this on the fly because somebody's going to do something wrong or you're going to break that trust with your clients and your customers or maybe even your employees.
One thing that really interests me about that, it's fascinating that that's the list that you chose, or the top three, because I recently ran a survey on this because I was really curious to see like what people cared about in the context of ransomware. And needless to say, everyone was super worried about ransomware. Okay, no problem, typical. But the interesting part was when I asked what the most important tool that they could not live without was for a ransomware attack. And I was really expecting the answers to overwhelmingly be related to keeping backups and keeping backups secure. But it wasn't. It was actually all over the board between cyber insurance. Backups were on the list, but very much so on par with even things like AV and EDR, which was very surprising to me. So I'd love to hear from you, like, where backups land on that list and how that comes along with this. Because even with the Norsk Hydro example, which I'm so glad you brought up because I found that to be so fascinating, so little of the ultimate cost, I think it was like something ridiculous, like $60 million or something total after that occurred, only like 6% of that was actually covered by cyber insurance. Mm-hmm. So how does that, like, is that typical, or would you say that's an edge case for cyber insurance providers?
In my experience, I don't know how typical that is. What I can say is one of the things that we found is that some organizations have a very high deductible for their cyber insurance. And so, you know, they may get told, well, you have to go with one of our panel providers, but it really doesn't matter because when you look at how much you're paying out in the deductible, you're going to be paying that anyways. You're going to be paying for those organizations anyways. I have seen where most organizations who go through a cyber insurance, as long as, again, it all depends on the policy, but they are able to recoup at least some costs. It varies is what it comes down to. With backups, yeah, I would absolutely put those up on high for ransomware attacks, because without backups, that's really the primary way that you can recover from a ransomware incident. And we could talk for an hour or more about, you know, the bad things we see with backups. But what it comes down to is most organizations, at least in my experience, that lose their backups during a ransomware attack, it's because either they have moved to a completely internal or cloud based backup system. So in other words, you know, their backups are never really offsite. I mean, technically in the cloud, yeah, they're offsite, but I mean like physically offsite, going old school, putting them on tape, having Iron Mountain or somebody come and pick up those tapes or throwing them in a safe somewhere. You know, most organizations have moved away from that. And because of that, you know, the attackers, once they get into your organization, the first thing they're going to go for is your backups, because they know that as soon as they can delete those, they're in the clear. They're probably going to get their money. We've even through tabletop exercises have, you know, gone through the, you know, a mock ransomware incident. And once we get to that backup portion, we even find other kind of holes in somebody's backup infrastructure, where even if the attacker couldn't necessarily get into those systems to delete backups, there's other issues. One example I'm thinking of is we talked to one organization and they encrypted their backups, which good, you know, you should be doing. But the file that the KeePass file that they kept their passwords in for the backups was on a file share. And that's going to be the first thing that gets encrypted. So at that point, they're out of luck. They're going to have to pay the ransom in order to get back their backups, which probably do exist. So there's, you know, backups, in my opinion, should be treated almost as securely as like your Active Directory server or any like, you know, sensitive information, because it really is.
That those poor people ransomed their own files themselves. Yep. Oh, God.
That's a very, very interesting, Tyler. And as we come to the close here, maybe Ali, you can comment on this. Maybe three quick points. One, are we seeing organizations become either lazy or misinformed? That example of we do our backups in the cloud, so we don't have to do them offsite with Iron Mountain any longer. Or are we seeing movements like that where they're trying to save money or expenses or trim processes or whatever the reason is that's putting them more at risk? Is there a cost that you see most companies aren't really focused on that they really should be?
Ooh, Those are good questions. I tend on the side of empathy, so I don't think they're lazy or misinformed, but I do think that it is very challenging to dedicate that much of your company's budget to something that's meant to protect against something that you don't know if it's going to happen or not. And that's a security problem. It also doesn't help that we have a huge skills gap in this industry that has kind of prevented these organizations from potentially having access to someone who has the same level of skill that they could get access to with other business functions. So that is a definite challenge. There's also a challenge around actually getting the advice that you need to secure your organization with limited resources. You know, it's great that a lot of vendors put out blogs that are supposed to give educational advice, but ultimately those blogs are all leaving you to buy their product. And their products typically are more on the cutting edge and aren't necessarily the things that are going to be really beneficial for these organizations. Even like a great example of this is one of my coworkers, Chris Sherman. He's an analyst on the team, and he wrote a report on using built-in OS security as your EPP, basically an EPP equivalent, but obviously much cheaper because you don't actually have to pay for a separate tool. Those types of things are fascinating because they take advantage of the fact that you have these tools already implemented and you can actually enable security features that will protect you much more than if you just say, well, I can't afford that fancy security tool, so I'm not going to do anything. But of course, there's not a lot of money in companies putting out that information. So that's where the challenge comes into play. And now I can't remember your second question. Can you repeat it?
I know I shouldn't have combined the two. So quickly to close, a cost that organizations aren't really paying attention to.
I think that with ransomware in particular, the cost that organizations don't recognize immediately is the cost of having so many people in the organization be affected by the ransomware attack. It's not even about business disruption at that point. It's just, this is when you are hit with a successful ransomware attack, this is something that your CEO is thinking about, your CFO is thinking about, everybody on your team, your CMO, especially when it comes to communicating to the press, and then also your legal team. And obviously they are one of the most expensive parts of the organization for good reason. I think the hidden cost that comes into play here is really the executive presence and the number of people in your organization that are not going to be working on the tasks that they're meant to work on.
Well, big conversation, Sean. A lot of things to think about. Obviously, that's what we do here on ITSP Magazine. We rarely come out with an answer that you can just go and buy out of the shelf. But it makes you think. And we hope that's what it does. A lot of different perspective from Tyler and Ellie. It's a complex problem with complex solution. Definitely don't put the backup keys under the mat like my grandma used to do. Thank you very much. And we hope you stay with us as we are redefining security on ITSP Magazine.
Purpose built for securing Active Directory, Symparis delivers first of its kind solutions to address the entire lifecycle of a directory attack. Finding and fixing security vulnerabilities, intercepting privilege escalation and persistence, and quickly responding to cyber attacks. Learn more at Symparis.com. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTALLIANCE.net. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Security Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPMagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.